This is the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 41, recorded Saturday, August 18th, 2012. Megabytes of who knows what. Apple updates Xcode 4.4, seeds the first point release for Mountain Lion, and somehow manual symbolic gating crash reports has become broken. On August 7th, Apple released version 4.4.1 of Xcode. Besides the already known 4.4 news, the release notes are simply: this update runs on both OS X Lion and OS X Mountain Lion. There was an article by Apple Insider that claimed that 4.4.1 was the first release of Xcode as a standalone app, but apparently deleted the article after realizing that this is BS. Though you still can find all the other blogs which simply copied some contents of the original content. I think I remember that Xcode 4.3 was the first version which replaced the installer app with an Xcode app and moved some of the developer tools inside the app bundle. Version 10.8.1 of Mountain Lion is not out to the public yet, but if you are registered for the Mac Developer Program, you have received an invite to the seed download invitation. There were rumors that this supposedly tweaks something about the graphics card to use less battery because people were claiming reduced battery endurance with 10.8, though the seed notes do not specifically mention this. A user opened the distribution files in a tool called Pacifist and reports this. Things of note: Mail, QuickTime Player, Kernel, Apple Smart Battery Manager, 802.11, AHCI, and USB Kext. Updates to System Mail Components, Messages Components, Bonjour. So there might be something in there with either Kernel, Apple Smart Battery Manager. Maybe there are some tweaks in here. Alright. I was fearing a bug in Mountain Lion. I called it a showstopper. It turned out it was not a bug in Mountain Lion, but it was a bug in Zimbra, which is the email group messaging solution that I use. Zimbra is an open source project which you can install on your Linux server, and so I have done, or actually rather my system administrator, which is a former colleague of mine, did that for me, and it works really good until I started playing around with Mountain Lion, where I found I couldn't add calendar entries anymore. The calendar on Zimbra is accessed over CalDAV, and as soon as you would add a calendar entry there, you would get an error that there was some problem with the server. If you looked at the logs, it was an error 400, and you got like a long error description. I filed that as a bug, but secretly, because it at that time was still related to unreleased product. Now it turns out, after quite a few more people have upgraded to Mountain Lion, they were all also seeing this problem in Zimbra, and it turns out it's a bug in Zimbra itself. Namely, Zimbra apparently doesn't like if a calendar entry doesn't have a reminder set. So if you just have the entry there and doesn't ring a bell, say 15 minutes before, that would cause it to respond with 400. And they updated Zimbra to also allow alert none. There's a workaround, of course. The workaround is you can go into your mail settings and enable default reminders for everything. So say a calendar entry, it should pop up a reminder at the time when the meeting starts. There's also something about all day events. You can be reminded the day before. Birthdays, you can be reminded the same day. If you set all of this and save it, then the problem doesn't occur anymore. And I think it's the same for reminders. So reminders and calendar both use CalDAV and both are affected by this bug. So there's a workaround. There's already a fix for that. So in one of the next Simbra updates, that will be in there. What's weird is that this never occurred to me before. I was using my Simbra from my iPhone also over CalDAV and didn't ever see the problem. Maybe the iPhone sets reminder times though. I actually don't remember that really. Yeah, well, so I set the default alerts and now the problem no longer occurs. Several developers reported that they are no longer able to manually symbolicate crash reports with the Xcode 4.4 tools. We found this problem ourselves as well, trying to symbolicate a crash report with the DSIM and the app binary, which had before been generated on our Jenkins build server. There are two apparent workarounds, though I don't understand how those are interrelated. There's one about getting the A2S ATOS start address, and the second one is about hacking the symbolicate script. As I understand it, then you can just look at the latter, because the ATOS one only works if you have the debug symbols not stripped from the binary. The script fix is about helping the MDFind tool, which is being used by the script to find the binary inside the app bundle, to actually find it. It seems that it's somehow too restricted, and there's even a radar for that. It might have to do with some people renaming the app bundle and DSIM after building to, for example, include the build number. Something about that breaks the search, and with this mentioned hack, you can make the search a bit broader that it actually finds the binary. In the series Apple's most overlooked technologies, I would like to present to you today the software update services. That's something that's been in the server software that you could get for OS X. I only know about the last three versions, and actually really only about the last two versions, because there the server software you could actually get on the Mac App Store. And it was a download you could purchase for very little money, like $20 or so, and install on any Lion or Mountain Lion server, and that would immediately give you several benefits. And one that I am quite in love with these days is the software update services. I wrote a lengthy blog post about how to set it up on Mountain Lion and on Lion, and I can tell you it's a cool thing if you have, say, three Macs or more. Maybe if you have a small work group and you happen to have a Mac Mini running all the time, say as a build server, say as an email server, then it's a great thing to also have the software update services. Now, there's a bit of false information on Apple's website. They claim you can only serve updates up to the level of the operating system. So Lion could only serve until Lion, and it wouldn't be able to serve Mountain Lion. And you would have to get a Mountain Lion server app and install that on Mountain Lion so that you could serve Mountain Lion machines. Now, that's not really true. Apparently, software update services internally uses an Apache instance that has a config file. And in this config file, you can add a redirect for the header that comes with Mountain Lion. It's darwin/12, and then it will redirect to the correct catalog. And also this additional catalog you can simply add to the swup config, not the config, the plist. I've described the steps on my blog, and the article is linked in my show notes. That leaves me basically with two such servers running. both incidentally are on Lion, and both are working as they should, namely saving us basically a lot of time, because if each machine has to individually check and download all these updates, that's a bit of an inconvenience, especially if you have, say, more than a handful. But if you have the update server download this update when it becomes available once, say during the night, then all the machines, first of all, the checking for update procedure takes much less time. And once it's detected that there's an update, it gets that from your local server and has a cached instance there. So that's something that's really cool and really speeds it up. On Mountain Lion, you don't see the progress anymore. On Lion, you could still see this progress bar going from the left to the right really fast. But in Mountain Lion, you just have the spinner. But what the App Store app does on Mountain Lion is it does two requests. It does one to your update server, which is specified in the catalog URL plist entry from... there's a certain setting that you can set with defaults, right? To check your server instead. And the second thing it does is it contacts the App Store and basically sends them a list of apps and versions that you have, and you get back a list of what updates are available. So, well, that might be a bit of a privacy concern, but then again, you only have apps installed that are from the App Store anyway, so it probably wouldn't make a difference. Unfortunately, you no longer have a progress indicator, because otherwise you could see how fast the part now is that goes against your server. Yeah. If you have multiple desktops, especially and servers, that's a really good thing to have. Also, you basically know if you check the console when what updates were released, and you can check if there are some fixes that you are waiting for on certain machines. So that's a really nice thing. And the thing is, you can choose to either download all the available updates, but the problem with that is apparently that will download around 100 gigabytes, 120 gigabytes of mostly megabytes that you don't need, because there's updates and components for old versions of Apple software, Final Cut Express and PowerPC updates and so on and so forth, and even things like voices for if you have accessibility enabled to speak text, you can specify, I think it's like 30 voices or so. And recently there was an update 2.0 for all these voices that you don't have installed, but if you choose them in the accessibility tool, it will go to the update server and download that. And I think for these, it is probably sufficient if they come from Apple server. If I understand it correctly, the catalog that your update server responds with shows your own server URL for the things that it has locally cached, and it will show the original update URL from Apple for the things you have not. So the ideal setting is probably to only download latest things. There's another thing: if you have too many things for downloading, during the download you will get an error message when you check for updates, or when you go to the web URL in Safari, you will get either a 404 or a 403. The reason for that is, unfortunately, that's quite some legacy thing, this software update services. It's a Unix daemon that uses an Apache instance. I said before, it works with gigantic plists. It doesn't do any sort of core data, as far as I've seen, and they didn't really update the core functionality of that with Mountain Lion. The only thing they did is Mountain Lion versus Lion. Under Lion, you had two parts. You had a server app and a server admin app, and those were more or less merged into a single server app that you can purchase for Mountain Lion and install, and it's really cheap as well. And it's a really cool thing to have this pretty well simplified. Many admins say, well, it's too much simplified, I lose all the options and so on. But yeah, well, for somebody just taking a mini and want that to have as a server for workgroup, it's a really good thing. And the last thing that I want to mention is smart app banners. Actually it's still something that's not quite released yet, but the information is public that smart app banners will be there. And if you know, if you go dig around on some web pages who have already rolled out the necessary modifications, basically you add a meta tag with a certain ID, the ID of your app. And then it will be smart about what it does. If you have the app installed, it will show you an open button. If you don't have it installed, you will see the app icon and your name and how much it is, and I think even an average rating. And that's really cool. Like on the TED.com site, if you go to the site, it will show you there's a TED app, and that's the one thing. So you can use it as a sort of advertisement. If you have a product page for a certain app, if people go to this on a iOS 6 device, they will immediately get the download link and the banner, and they will see the rating and so on. Stuff that you can't really do with some sort of JavaScript magic. And the other thing that's even niftier is you can have deep linking. So imagine the TED.com page. If you go to the front page, you just start the app basically. But if you end up, say, through a Google search or because somebody tweeted a link to a really cool TED talk, actually the URL of this page can be passed to the app. And then this player app can open itself on the suitable page that matches the location where the user was in Safari. And that's a really cool thing. And as I said before, it's already public knowledge how to do that. There is a plugin for WordPress I've linked to in this article that I've in turn linked to in the show notes. And also I'm thinking that everybody should, who's got some sort of content or blog or a reader app for a forum, should implement these deep linking things, because it leaves the user in the same context where he was on the website. So, well, that's it for this week's episode of the Coconetics podcast. Not so much to talk about this week, but I hope you will join me again next week when I do another episode. See you until then. Bye-bye.